back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We have been chasing this guy around for a Baltimore Positive chat for some period of time, and opening up a cross-street market in my neighborhood, and I'm eating Taharka ice cream and eating my Rofo chicken. So we got a great guest ahead. Before we do that, though, I got to make Don Moeller jealous here for another episode of Baltimore Positive, because he ordered some Fadleys. He had it delivered back in the beginning of the pandemic, and I'm like, you know what? Pandemic's not going to last that long, but if it does, I'll figure out a way to get some Fadleys. I finally got some Fadleys today. So, Don, I finally got my mac and cheese, and it's just as good as I remember from 2 months ago. So I want to give some love to Fadleys. Also, our friends at State Fair. I know Don's down the street there. I think he's sneaking out some State Fair and not telling me about it. He's a, you know, he put that out on the internet. He'll know I'm not getting any of it, but shrimp and grits, stop by, get some chicken wings to go. All sorts of great things there. Plenty of social distancing outside, curbside at State Fair Fadleys. Don't forget Moeller and Gary Realty as well. Still closing deals, still getting it done, still showing homes online virtually from 6.5 feet away. Jeff Moeller's there to take care of you and Moeller and Gary. And, of course, the previously mentioned, and you know what? I'm probably going to yell for my wife if she weren't on a conference call right now, Arsh Merman here, from Kays Valley and all of our friends in South Baltimore. But you were the one who told me about Taharka. You were the one who told me about the key lime pie. I legitimately have a whole pint of it in my freezer here, and I have not had it yet. My wife took a bite of it, and she said, "You're going to like it," is what she told me. So you're the second person. She's the second person, but you've told me all along that Taharka ice cream is where it's at. So we appreciate them coming aboard. And Don, I know you've been friends with Arsh for a number of years as well. I'm going to let you do the introductions, but at some point in this segment, I'm going to have some key lime pie.
You have some key lime pie.
During the segment, you're having key lime pie?
Well, if I can get my wife to bring it in, yes.
That's rude.
No, well, she can have some too.
It's only rude because I don't have any right now.
Oh, okay.
We do welcome Arsh Merman from Kays Valley Partners. Kays Valley doing great things around the region, and what an important time, really, to talk to someone like Arsh, because they're trying to keep everything moving forward in these unprecedented times. Arsh, welcome to Baltimore Positive, and I am sure that when you were putting the finishing touches on Cross Street Market, pandemic plan wasn't near the front of your list, was it?
No, I gotta tell you, we try to cover most possibilities, but we had not thought about this one at all. It caught everyone by surprise, and we've been doing our best trying to manage around it and trying to keep our tenants afloat and trying to get them in the best position possible to reopen and be successful moving forward once the restrictions are lifted. We've been working, we have a group called Cana Development, who's been our consultant all along on this project. And they have a number of markets and food halls on which they are partners or consultants. And they've come up with a really great reopening plan, various phases, different scenarios where, you know, you might be at 25% seating or 50% seating, or, you know, just basically trying to think of every potential scenario going forward in terms of reopening to have ourselves best positioned to be able to kind of hit the ground running as quickly as possible once the restrictions are lifted and people are able to go out and about again. So no, we had not thought about this, but we're pivoting on the fly, and you know, in some ways it's an opportunity, in a lot of ways it's a huge detriment, but we're doing our best with it.
You know, Arsh, 50,000 feet with Baltimore Positive, we put this thing together a year and a half ago, and I knew of you and your group and whatever, and all of a sudden, you're in my neighborhood, right? Like, I mean, I live in Federal Hill, my wife and I use Cross Street Market. We've always thought, like, what if it were this? What if it were that? What if it were like a Whole Foods? What if it were like the place we saw somewhere else, or a place we saw in New York, or a place we saw in Europe, you know? And we said, what would ever happen to that? And I think to myself, who are these people that come into communities and do these projects? When I see them in other places, I'm like, where'd the money come from? Where'd the elbow grease come from? Who had the passion to do this? And look, isn't this wonderful? And we see this in all these other places, which is the reason I birthed this, right? And then you and I come in the past, and I really tip my cap to County Executive Don Moeller. I always call him Don or D.I. or my friend or my former guidance counselor in 1982. But the County Executive, you know, took me under 18 months ago and said, I'll let you talk to all these people. Let's talk to these people. Let's talk about everything that's going on in Baltimore. And one of the things we all wish for is for our neighborhood, wherever our neighborhood is, to have these cornerstone awesome things like schools and police and post office and all this stuff. And you've tried to do this in the neighborhood in over a year and a half. You and I have met online, talked offline, had a coffee, had an ice cream, joked about key lime pie and whatever. And the whole thing is we're gonna get it there. We're gonna open it, and then it's gonna be ready. And then it's gonna be ready. My wife and I start shopping there. And then it's, hey, let's get you on the show. Well, it's not really ready yet. I want to get the whole thing ready. And then COVID hits. It feels like it's never, it's an ongoing thing, but it's always sort of pushing the boulder uphill. But I do feel like we're going to get there. It's there. I walk by it. I know I'm going to go in there and buy produce. I know I'm going to get coffee in there. I know Alex is going to get the raw bar and all the other cool stuff on the other end of it. But it does feel like once it's, we're going to have a hell of a celebration when this is all over with and we fix everything, right?
Yeah, I mean, so Alex was supposed to open now-ish. And so we would have been basically at 100% complete. And obviously, this hit and there's a bit of a delay there. Alex is, he's got his permits and he's ready to go. I mean, our expectation is he's probably going to start next month. And should be, you know, it's a very extensive build. He redesigned the roof deck, took it through design review, actually made it even better than it was initially. I think it's a really, really cool design now. Not that it wasn't initially, but I think it's over the top cool.
It's
now.
It's stunning. It really, I mean, so, when you look at it, it looks like things I see in other places, quite frankly, right? It really does.
No, that's right. That's right. And it's uniquely Baltimore in that it's going to be a crab house and a seafood restaurant. And I mean, look, it's called Watershed, right? So the idea is that it's from the Chesapeake Bay watershed. And it's very, very uniquely Baltimore. But you're right. You do see places that are kind of, you know, over the top sexy, if you will, in other towns. And there are only a limited number of places in Baltimore that we have stuff like that. So I think it's going to be a really nice addition. Once Alex is done with his space, we'll be, you know, and hopefully at that point we'll be coming out of this and we'll be, you know, by next summer, we'll be at full strength. We were hoping that was going to be by this summer and we've gotten a little bit of a delay, but we'll get there. I mean, there are bigger issues in the world right now than the market not being 100% done. So yeah. We fully recognize where we fit into the big picture, but we're also very eager to get the project completely finished and have it be an amenity for South Baltimore and for all of Baltimore.
Well, it's in my neighborhood. You know, it's my hub. It's a place I want to see be as awesome as the pictures look. And I think through all of this patience, you know, we're going to be up there having a beer at some point, and this is all going to be behind us. But in the middle of it, it's up to leadership to come together, right, Don?
Yeah, and I'm thinking, Nestor, what we need to do for those folks listening in their cars, listening at home, is we have Arch here. Arch, paint us a picture, because people probably have an image in their mind of Cross Street Market. You know, they're in Baltimore County, Anne Arundel County, Harford County, Carroll County, you name it. If they're out there and around, they say, yeah, you know, I've heard of Cross Street, and I'm familiar with these old Baltimore markets. Tell folks a little bit about, give them a real specific idea of where it is, and why, when we come out of this pandemic, they should come on down. Give them a sense of what's there, Arch, because you guys have done.
We'll start with the Royal Farms chicken.
Start with the Royal Farms chicken. I mean, so Don, good question. I think, you know, the great thing is a lot of people have been to the market over the years. It obviously looks and feels a little bit different than it has in a long time. But I know when it was first reopened, it had an active vibe. And even, you know, even until the time we took it over, at times it had an active vibe, but most of the time it was, you know, one of the former merchants made the comment to me, sent me an email, said, please hurry up. It's, you know, 12:30 at peak lunchtime and you could shoot a cannon off in here and not hit anyone. So right. That's really why we took the project on. And Nestor, I think you know this, but I mean, so I used to live in the neighborhood. When I first moved back to Baltimore, I lived up on the 600 block of South Charles Street in one of those walk-up condos right behind where you live. And then when I left for business school and then came back, And I lived over on the west side for a few years in a project called the Redwood, which the company that I worked for right out of business school, A&R Development, developed and owns. And so I lived there for a while. And then I ended up moving, my now wife and I moved to Federal Hill. I used to live a block away from the market. And Federal Hill has been where I've, you know, where I hung out.
That's Baltimore to you, right? Literally, right?
30s.
Yeah, that's Baltimore to you. That's home, right? Literally.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's so Federal Hill, it wasn't like I'm going to parachute into Federal Hill and do this thing. This was, I lived in the neighborhood. I hung out in the neighborhood. That's my side of town, right? That's where I used to live, and that's the part of town that I know the best. Interestingly, my partners, when they first moved back to Baltimore, that was their scene, and now their sons and daughters, when they finish up college and move back to Baltimore, that's where they've chosen to live too. So we're three generations of people who have lived in South Baltimore, worked in South Baltimore, developed in South Baltimore. So we have it's your neighborhood still. But I still, you know, I spend most of my time when I come downtown, in South Baltimore. And so it's home to us too. We don't put our heads on our pillows, as close as you do now. But we're down there all the time. And the market had fallen into disrepair. I mean, people had seen it. There were very few tenants remaining in the market who had any sort of following. And this was actually a study. When Councilman Eric Costello was the president of the Federal Hill Neighborhood Association, he did a study, a big poll of all the neighborhoods in South Baltimore, not just Federal Hill, but Federal Hill South and Riverside and Otterbein and Sharp Leadenhall and Locust Point, and did a study of what people wanted most in South Baltimore. And the number one thing was the revitalization of Cross Street Market. So this was something from a demand standpoint that came from all the neighborhoods that surrounded the Cross Street Market. I mean, we say it's the heart of South Baltimore, and it truly is. It's all the neighborhoods care about it, whether they're a 30-second walk across the street or whether they're a 20-minute walk from Locust Point. And it's something that's near and dear to everyone who lives in South Baltimore and also people who visit South Baltimore. So that's where the desire to do this came from. It was to try to create an amenity. And the first project I did after I left A&R Development, and through which I ended up becoming a partner at Caves Valley Partners, was 1111 Light Street, which is directly across the street on the Light Street side from the market. And I redeveloped that project. Caves Valley Partners were my equity partners on it, and then we ended up becoming partners on a number of different projects. We did Riverside Wharf over at Lawrence Street and Key Highway. That's a MedStar office building, a medical office building. We're doing Stadium Square, a block and a half west of Cross Street Market, which has apartments and retail and offices. So we've been really active. We've got a project going on with Wood Partners on the 18 and 1900 blocks of South Hanover Street. And this is really, I mean, this is an amenity for everyone who lives in South Baltimore, as well as for all of our projects. And that's why we took it on and did the best we could to try to create a great amenity for South Baltimore. So Don, I haven't addressed your question yet, so I can launch into it. I mean, so if you go down there, Cross Street Market sits between Charles Street and Light Street, South Charles Street and Light Street, at the 1100 block of each. The address is actually, it's technically, I guess it's the 1000 block. But it's 1065 South Charles Street. It sits between Light and Charles, and Cross Street Market spans the entire block between Light and Charles Streets. The market sits in between the eastbound and the westbound portions of East Cross Street. So it's the unit block. It's the block to the east of Charles Street and going over to Light Street. The long, narrow building, it's 550 feet long and 65 feet wide. It's not only in the heart of the action for South Baltimore, but if you're going to a baseball game, it's an easy walk to Camden Yards. If you're at the harbor, it's a third of a mile walk south into Federal Hill to go check out, this old historic public market. And, you know, before Ravens games, Federal Hill is the scene. I mean, that's where, if you're not tailgating around the stadium, you're hanging out in Federal Hill, and then you got a short walk over to the stadium before the game. And I know everyone's pretty eager to get back to that stage of being able to go out before a game and head over to M&T.
Doesn't sound nice. That sounds nice.
It will.
There will be. It will.
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if it happens in some form this fall. I'm expecting that we have our stuff together enough as a country to be able to have the NFL season. I'm hopeful that the NFL has their stuff together enough to allow some fans. It might be limited, but I think hopefully we should be able to in a place where we have some fans going to games this fall. But if not, then hopefully they'll be playing in the stadiums and we'll be watching at home for a season, and then we'll be back at it next year. But the market, it's hard to kind of picture it. If people jump online, the website is www.crossstmarket. So Cross Street Market, but Street is just abbreviated ST. www.crossstmarket.com. And you can get a visual for what it looks like. When it was originally built back in the 1800s, it was a two-level market. It was partially two-level, and there was a recreation center up top, and there was a basketball court up there, and it was the hub of activity for the neighborhood. It burned down and was rebuilt in the early 1950s, and it was effectively, not to oversimplify it, but kind of a cinder block box with windows. Long, skinny cinder block box with windows. Well, over the years, those windows ended up getting blocked in to the point that there was no natural light coming into the market. But, you know, it still had doors on both sides of the market, and then it had its main doors.
Was that for windows to not get busted out, or was that for windows to not be seen in, or any idea how that happened, how it got so dark in there?
Yeah, so the reason it became kind of this, and look, Councilman Costello makes the comment that there was, when he did that big poll, his favorite quote from it is that the market had all the charm of a juvenile detention facility. That was what one of the respondents had written. He said the market has all the charm of a juvenile detention facility. It's pretty, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that's pretty close to what the quote was. And the reason was that they had the main aisle down the middle and the stalls on either side. And then they had put refrigeration and storage and kind of back of the house stuff along the outside walls. Well, they didn't want people looking right into the refrigeration. And so they blocked in the walls, they blocked in the windows. So they ended up with no windows. Even the windows on the Light Street side and the Charles Street side were clouded. So you couldn't see in the market. And it really took away from the vibe of the place. You know, people like natural light. That's why office spaces now are required to have natural light. So that was one of our primary goals, is to open the place back up, let the neighborhood look into the market, let the market look out into the neighborhood. And if you want to be the center of activity for a neighborhood, people need to be able to see in and people need to be able to see out. So that was a big, big deal on the design. And that kind of drove a lot of what we were doing there. So now when you go there, there were very few common seating areas in the previous iteration. We now have a whole lot of spaces throughout the market with plenty of natural light coming out. You can look out and see the street scene in Federal Hill. People can look in and see the hustle and bustle inside the market. We still have the center aisle configuration. So as you walk down the market, you know, you see all the different tenants on either side. Toward the center of the market, there's a craft beer bar that's called Cans. You can get beer in cans there. You can get beer on draft there. You can get beer to go. They're selling beer to go now. And
it's my favorite kind. It always tastes best that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And then you can also get draft beer to go, and that's where they got the name Cans. They used to have these growlers, the glass bottles that they fill up and seal for you to take. They've now perfected the technology, or at least improved the technology. They do it in aluminum cans, so you can get beer to go, and it'll taste perfectly fresh at home. But it's draft beer to go. And so they have that. There's a cocktail bar and wine bar that's called Old Line. That's right on the other side. These are toward the center of the market. So you've got cans and Old Line of wine and cocktail bar, and then you've got cans, which is the craft beer bar. And then you have a variety of different food tenants. Starting on the Light Street side, you have Ceremony Coffee, which is a high-end coffee shop, which is right on the end cap. So when you walk in on the Light Street side, on your right, you'll have Ceremony Coffee. On your left, there's a farm store called Rooster and Hen. Rooster and Hen, I think there were some concerns along the way that it wouldn't be a market anymore. We have more stuff in there now than at least, I mean, I've known the market really well for the last 20 years. I think it's probably been longer than that since there was the same variety of, you know, kind of grocery and market items in there. Rooster and Hen has anything from fresh flowers to fruits and vegetables. They have dairy. They have nuts, spices, jams. They have pies. They've got bread, kind of you name it. That you would find at a farm store, they have there. And then we'll also, those are both on the Light Street side. As you walk down, you've got Fenwick Meats on your right, which is the butcher, Henry Reisinger, who's the brother of Councilman Ed Reisinger. Henry has been the longtime butcher in Cross Street Market. He remains. He's been doing great business throughout the shutdown. A lot of people in Federal Hill are picking up their meat from him, which is amazing because when the world reopens, Henry hopefully will have a whole bunch of new customers now who will just get their meat from him. They won't get it at the grocery store anymore. They'll get it from their local butcher. So you've got Fenwick Meats. And then Alex Smith, Atlas Restaurant Group, will be opening up a seafood stall that's going to be called Atlas Fish Market. And they will have a wide range of food, of seafood from all of their different restaurants, which you can buy here fresh.
Well, that's like sushi grade tuna stuff, right? Like really, really nice stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, so all the sushi grade fish that you get at Azumi, you can buy it here and, you know, they can, you'll get a slab of tuna and take it home and have super fresh sushi on your roof deck in Federal Hill, or in your, you know, back patio in Lutherville. Wherever you're coming from, I think it's going to be, you know, right now, like where are you going to go to get your fresh seafood? I think it's going to be the best place in town. It's going to be better than, you know, going to your Whole Foods or wherever grocery store you're going to now to get your seafood.
Well, these are all local businesses more than anything else. You just mentioned the place owned by Amazon, right? Like famously, these are South Baltimore businesses and South Baltimore people, as it's always been. I mean, I even see some sort of locally brand stuff like Taco Love that I used to have to be a guy to go to the county to get that. Now it's down the street, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So Taco Love Grill is a Mexican concept there. It's owned by a couple who opened a restaurant in White Marsh initially, and then they created Taco Love Market, which is their Mexican concept in the market. You can get they're open throughout this, and you can get Mexican food to go. You can get margaritas that are pre-mixed and really nicely packaged to go. And you know, when the market reopens, obviously you can go and sit down and get really great freshly prepared Mexican food. They're toward the Charles Street side. So they're west of the center of the market, down toward where Atlas is, along with Southside Burger Bar, which if you ever go down, I know you do, Nestor, but if others go to Southside Diner in the Southside Shopping Center over in Locust Point, the team from Southside Diner has created Southside Burger Bar, which is kind of a no frills burger, hot dog, and chicken wing concept that's inside the market. That's down on the same side as where Atlas is going to go. You've got Pizza to Joey, who lives in the neighborhood. Joey Vannoni is the owner's name. He's done an absolutely amazing job through this period. He's added different business lines. He's added delivery. He's added pizza kits. He butts up next to Atlas. So he'll be down in the heart of the action on that end of the market when it reopens. He's done a really nice job as just trying to, you know, keep afloat through this difficult period.
Go ahead, keep going. I'm sorry.
No. I was just saying, I could go through the entire market. There's a Vietnamese concept in there. There's a Korean concept.
I've eaten both of those, by the
concept.
Way. Yeah, I love all the places.
Gangster
there.
Vegan is actually reopening tomorrow, I think. They shut down for a little bit, but they're reopening. I think they realize people are feeling a little unhealthy being holed up at home. They're doing a whole line of juice cleanses that you can pre-order and go pick up and try to get your body back on track here as we get into summer. So Gangster Vegan's reopening, and they're going to be they're going to be an integral part of the market going forward. Sobo Cafe and Sobo Market. Anna, who owns both of those, has Anula's Greek Kitchen, which is another one of the concepts that's open in the market right now. She's of Greek descent and has opened a Greek concept to go along with Sobo Cafe and Sobo Market.
My wife's favorite restaurant in South Baltimore, Sobo Cafe, by the way, so we know her well. These are my neighbors, man, right? I mean, there really is.
No offense to anyone else, but that's my favorite restaurant in South Baltimore also. I mean, I probably ate there, probably 2.5 times a week over a 5-year stretch when Stadium Square was getting going. So,
well, you tell the people at So Beachy that I stopped in there for some Haitian right before the COVID, and I got to get back because it was that good. It was one of the best plates of food I've had, literally.
Leo and Chanel, the proprietors of So Beachy, it's So Beachy Haitian cuisine, their personalities are over the top, really, engaging with customers. I had never had Haitian food before, and I met them, Mike Morris and Katie Zolte. Mike is the head of Cana, and Katie and Nick Alevrianis, they're the team that's been doing the leasing and done an amazing job of getting a great mix of tenants in there. They took me to the Pratt Street market one day for lunch, and they said, you got to check out this Haitian couple's food. And I said, I'm there. So I met them down there and had their food, and I was like, we've got to get them in there. I mean, it's so incredibly unique. It's Baltimore's only Haitian restaurant, and their food is absolutely fantastic. They've got fresh juices also, including some where they'll add rum and make it a little bit more fun. So they're in there. I'm trying to think of who I've missed. Of course, I mean, you said it at the outset, Royal Farms. And I think there were, when we announced that Royal Farms was going to go in there, I think it raised a couple of eyebrows. People thought we were putting a convenience store in Cross Street Market. We thought about it. My partner Arthur actually had the idea. He said, listen, if we're trying to put a chicken place in here, what's more Baltimore than right. Royal Farms?
Right.
And I said, you're right. I said, it's synonymous with fried chicken. And I said, it was reviewed favorably in Food and Wine magazine. It's not like it's just like a local thing.
It's world famous. It says so right on the box.
Nationally, I recognize that they have this great fried chicken. And so we went to John Kemp, the owner of Royal Farms, and said, hey, what would you think about putting a chicken stall in there? And he said, I like the idea. And he did kind of this retro feeling chicken stall where he's got the same great chicken and sides that he has in his Royal Farm stores. But it's a chicken only place. And I joke, my hope is 5 years from now, people will say, oh yeah, they've got a wide distribution at their convenience stores, but it feels like it started in Cross Street Market, right? It feels so good and so unique that it feels like it was something that might've started in a market and then grown out distribution wise. But we all know that's the opposite, that it came into the market after already being successful outside the market. So,
well, when you describe this entire market, and this is certainly where Nestor and I have been with Baltimore Positive from day one. I mean, literally, I can't wait when you describe this to get the ollie in free, right? Like when we were little kids and we can all go out again and rush down there, whether it's to get the Haitian food or whether it's to make a visit to Alex Smith and the Atlas Group and what they're putting out there, the pizza place that you just—I mean, you name it—go right down the list. And one of our pitches is to everybody that's listening. We know folks listen all around the region, not just in Baltimore City. Is to say that if you're in the Baltimore County or Anne Arundel County or Harrod County, you name it, Hartford, right on down the line, Carol, make plans to get back to Baltimore City as soon as we can start moving around again, because there are great things happening in this city. And I want to circle back with you, Arsh, in the little time that we have. And we're with Arsh Mermeran, one of the partners of Caves Valley Partners, doing major investments, believing in Baltimore City. And that's the point I want to talk about. You started to talk about some of your projects in the city, Arsh. And what I say to that is, you guys aren't playing with monopoly money. You're putting real dollars and taking real risk to invest in Baltimore City. So what is it about this city that has its share of challenges that makes Caves Valley Partners believe that it has a bright future and makes you guys continue to be willing to put up millions of dollars in projects?
Look, Don, so we all grew up here. The partnership, everyone grew up here, and people left for various lengths of time and went off to college and worked in other cities and then came back to Baltimore. So we're committed to our hometown, and we actually made a strategic decision, I don't know how many years ago, 6 or 7 years ago, that we were going to focus on Baltimore City, Baltimore County. Not that we wouldn't do things outside of Baltimore City, Baltimore County, but that we were going to focus highly on doing projects in our own backyard. You can drive by your project all the time. You can get there. You have the lay of the land, if you will. A big part of it is that we all grew up here. We all love the city. We love the city. We love the county. We love the region, and we want to make it better. And that was a concerted effort and a strategic decision that we made several years ago, and we've stuck to it. I mean, I say, despite all its challenges, and we went, my wife and I and our daughters went down to Federal Hill to watch the flyover of the Blue Angels, I don't know, three or four weeks ago. Everyone was very well behaved and outside, not just our group, but everyone who was out and about that day was very well behaved, keeping distance, being safe, but enjoying Baltimore. And we stood on Federal Hill, and my friend, who we were with, he said, look at this town. And you stand there on Federal Hill and you look at Baltimore, and honestly, there is no reason whatsoever that we should not be a top 15 U.S. city. It's actually ludicrous that we're not a top 15 U.S. city. We have so much going for us, and we've never achieved our potential. We're trying to do our part to help us achieve our potential. There are many other developers and business people who are doing their part in trying to help us achieve our potential. We continue to believe that the city will get there. We would love for it to get there faster, right? It would be better for everyone from top to bottom in Baltimore for us to be able to get there faster and get there better. We need leadership to push us in that direction. And we're hopeful that'll happen in the coming years, that we'll get to our potential.
Well, Arsh, I was going to say, I was going to go to my mailbox. The ballots are out this week, right? Like, I haven't gotten mine yet, but I'll get it. This is the time, right? You talk about leadership, you know, we get to vote, and we all come together and we do it now. We'll do it again in November. That the conversation, at least, and Don would tell you privately and publicly that the last 18 months, we sort of evaluate what we're doing around here and saying, you know, where are we? Don, you would agree that in the last couple of months, especially during COVID, I think the voices have been louder for all these people who want to be mayor, that at least through all of these Zoom conferences and their time with us on Baltimore Positive and whatever they're doing on TV and the Sun and whatever, there is, you both of you would agree, right? That there is a conversation going on right now, that we are having some of the tough talk that we maybe have pushed under the carpet in previous administrations, during previous times. Times are too good. Let's not talk about that. Things are okay. We're all of agreement that there has been a conversation at least, right?
Oh, I think there's, and Arsh can weigh in on this. We recently chatted with Mark Steiner. There are going to be a couple of episodes up with Mark. We talked about really big ideas and vision for the city. And Nestor, I think you absolutely are correct, is that I love it. when you say this is the time, when Arch says this is the time, because people really are focused on the city, and I think people do believe in the city. Listen, are there naysayers? Are there people who are always going to point at the city and say, I'm never going back there? Yeah, okay, they're the ones missing out. But there are thousands and thousands of folks in the region who know that we're all in this together and that the success of the city leads to the success of the state. Now, I was struck, and it's not earth-shattering, and it shouldn't shock any of us, but in the most recent mayoral poll, they asked again about issues, and we can't tiptoe around this. The 70% of the people in that poll that The Sun conducted by Opinion Works, a very well-respected polling organization, 70% identified the number one issue in Baltimore City as crime. Every other issue, COVID was down lower, COVID was number two, and then when you got to the other issues that folks traditionally think about, they were literally in single digits. So for the investment community, for young kids growing up in the city, for the moms and dads and grandparents who want to be able to walk to the corner and get an ice cream from our new sponsor, and have some of that honey graham that you're talking about all the time.
He'll have the key lime, though. He's already told me that.
They got to try the key lime. So they've got.
I'm a little hooked on roasted strawberry right now.
My wife's favorite, right? Like it's a little tart.
All right, up with the. And they want to do it, and they want to do it safely. And the bottom line is that what I'm encouraged by, and there are a lot of plans, and there are lots of ways to get from A to B. We had a terrific discussion recently with the police chief in Baltimore County, Melissa Hyatt, who's just doing a terrific job for County Executive Wyszewski out in the county. And she obviously had a career in the city. She had a career at Johns Hopkins. She has a very broad view of public safety. There are ways to get there. But whoever wins this election, and Arsh, I'm going to ask you, not necessarily to pick a candidate, but I am going to ask you what you want, what you need in the next mayor, because it seems to me that whoever the next mayor is better be serious about making this city safe and then becoming its number one cheerleader. That's my litmus test. Can you make the city safe? And then can you make us all believe in the city again? That's my two things. What are yours, Arch?
I mean, look, so I had this discussion. I'm good friends with Pastor Alvin Gwynn Jr., who runs Leadenhall Baptist Church. We worked with them as we were doing our Stadium Square project to build a new community center in Sharp Leadenhall to provide job training opportunities and to provide food for those who need it various times and to provide after-school programs and so forth. Pastor Gwynn used to be a Baltimore City police officer, and we had this conversation. Now it's gone back almost 5 years since Freddie Gray, and he made the comment that the rioting at the time and the murders and so forth are a symptom of the real problem, right? They're a symptom of the fact that there's a lack of opportunity, there's a lack of education, there's a lack of job training for people in many of the communities throughout Baltimore, and that they manifest themselves in the form of crime and riots and murders and drug activity and so forth. That's the symptom. My counter to Pastor Gwynn, and he agreed, is if you have an illness, you don't just treat the illness, you treat the illness and the symptoms, right? So the notion, there's this notion of like, oh, you know, policing is inherently racist or classist, right? Depending on kind of where you are. Baltimore, it's viewed as racist because unfortunately.
Because in all honesty, Arch, we got to say, because in all honesty, and many times it was, right?
Agreed. 100%. It's incontrovertible. If anyone suggest otherwise, they're right. Fooling themselves, right? It's super clear cut. But I think if you ask good people living in West Baltimore, and that's the majority of them. And if you ask good people living in East Baltimore, and that's the majority of them, the great majority of them, they would say that effective policing is something they want more than the person sitting in Mount Washington or in Federal Hill.
Without a doubt.
Right? So the key is effective, thoughtful, fair policing. Not policing. Not saying the police are bad. No, make sure that the police are doing their job, doing it right, doing it ethically. But you have to police. You have to treat the symptom, and you have to treat the disease. The disease cannot be fixed overnight. The disease needs to be addressed overnight. They need, whoever is the next mayor, and if it's the current mayor, then great. They need to address the opportunity issues that there are, and need to really focus on education and focus on job training and focus on opportunity. And it's interesting, when Mary Miller first announced that she was running, her platform was all about opportunity for people in all walks of life, right? And I thought that was very, very compelling, which was her initial messaging. And I, in my opinion, the number one issue is opportunity. And that everyone in Baltimore, from the richest person to the poorest person, from the whitest person to the blackest person to the brownest person, you name it, if everyone has opportunity, that's what this country's all about. That's what the city should be all about. Everyone should have a chance. That's how it works. If everyone doesn't have a chance, you end up with the problems that we have. Why are there so many murders? There are a bunch of, I don't want to celebrate drug dealing as a profession, but if you gave me the opportunity with someone who's a really successful drug dealer, and you said, would you hire this person to do whatever work for you if he would guarantee that he would never, deal drugs or get involved in violence again? Probably, right? That guy's probably a really good entrepreneur. He's probably really smart. He's probably really driven. He didn't have the opportunity to go become a real estate developer, an attorney, a doctor. So he's doing the best with what he has. And that's the issue in my mind. But all that said, I'm a big proponent of policing. I'm a big proponent of cutting down crime, getting the murder rate down. I mean, there's this notion of like, well, the murder's isolated, so it's okay. It's not okay. To me, it's not okay. It's not just a perception issue. It may not be a reality issue for most people. It was for T.J. Smith, right? I mean, T.J. Smith has lived this. And
so is Jack, by the way.
All over the city have lived this.
Absolutely.
Right.
Well, hey.
Right, I don't know. One death is one too many. And the fact that you're referencing policing done the right way, I think the term that Governor O'Malley used, that Commissioner Harrison uses, is constitutional policing. That we need policing, we need trust in the communities. The answer isn't to stand down, but the answer is also not to be abusive. It's to police in a constitutionally acceptable way that all of our neighborhoods are safe and all of our neighborhoods are secure. And that's, as Nestor said, that's what's on the ballot come June 2nd, and that's people are going to be weighing in on who they think can deliver on that. Listen, Arsh, before you get away, I don't want you to get away without reflecting a little bit. You talked about opportunity and sort of opportunity, the key to everything. Boy, when you said that, did your dad pop into my mind. It's been almost a year since you lost your dad. He was a special guy. He showed up in this country from Iran when he was 18 years old, I think the way you described it, with a suitcase of his clothes, and that was it. Talk a little bit about this past year, and as time goes on, when you reflect on your dad, what do you think about?
Like, I've been thinking about him in particular a lot through this, and just trying to think about sort of what his viewpoint would have been on this, and sort of how he would have been feeling through this. And it's interesting because he was a busybody for lack of a more elegant way of putting it. I think back when our daughter, who's now 9, was born, when she was 2 months old, my wife and I had a wedding. Really close friends of ours were getting married, and we just weren't comfortable leaving her with a babysitter. We didn't, it was our first child, and we just the only people we trusted were my parents with them. And so they came down. We lived in an apartment downtown, and
And so they came over and were there from, I don't even know, the wedding was probably at 5 o'clock. So they came over at 4:30 and they were there till 11 at night. We ended up leaving, we had to leave the wedding a little early just because of the circumstances. So we come home, I opened the door to our apartment and literally ran in, like the door knocks into my dad. And I start laughing. I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm just pacing around. And, he did not like being stuck in a place. And, he's like, where were you? Like, what took you so long? I'm like, Dad, it was a wedding. Like, we actually left early. And he's like, yeah. He's like, we've just been, I said to my mom, I was like, has he been pacing around the whole time? And she's like, yeah. Like after about an hour, particularly after she went to sleep, my daughter went to sleep. He was just pacing around. Like, how much longer? So, he would not have enjoyed being holed up in a house right now. But I'll tell you what, I mean, as I'm thinking through and looking at all the statistics and the data and so forth, obviously, you know, people of his age, would need to be pulled up and protected. But, I think he would be of the opinion that the world must go on and you need to protect those who need protection and everyone else needs to go about their business. I mean, that's what this country is about. It's about people going out and working hard and making things happen. And the data is, in my mind, very, very clear that for most people, as long as they're safe about what, you know, the way they go about it, that we need to get back to it. So, I think that would be his overarching view on this thing, but I can tell you he'd be going stir crazy being stuck inside. You know, I'm sure he'd be going for plenty of walks and so forth and going outside and feeding his koi and sort of enjoying the house, but I think it'd be very easy to get out and about again.
Well, Arsh, I got to tell you, my wife got off her conference call and brought me some Taharka made in Baltimore here, key lime pie ice cream. So if she weren't wearing her pajamas while she's working, she'd probably jump in a set. She loves it. She's into the roasted strawberry as well. I don't have a microphone for her, so my wife wants to get in. She wants to see what I look like when I eat key lime ice cream here. She said it's not as tart as I think it's going to be. Arsh, you got anything you want to say while I'm eating this?
Everyone thinks it's going to be ultra tart. It's got the tart and then it's got the graham cracker crust that's ground into it. I'll tell you what, I'm not a huge ice cream fan in general, although I've become a little bit of a Taharka addict. The first time I tried that, I love key lime pie. I don't really like dessert.
See, I don't like key lime pie. That's the problem.
Oh, so good. It's so good. This is key lime pie in ice cream form. But I mean, I would argue that it's better than key lime pie. So I fell in love with the key lime pie. The reason Taharka is actually in Cross Street Market, the vendor who's in there who sells Taharka, it's called, the name of the place is The Sweet Shop, and Pete is the owner. He sold Hershey's ice cream for the longest time. And I said to him, I said, Pete, what do you think about putting a local ice cream in there? He said, well, like who? I said, I don't know. I mean, Taharka Brothers is really, really good. He's like, I've never heard of them. So I ended up introducing him to the team from Taharka. And he said, you know, it's great. Love the ice cream. And they ended up working out a deal where he carried Taharka Brothers ice cream and they bought him a new cooler case or a freezer case for the ice cream. And that's how they ended up in there. But I've become a huge, huge fan of multiple of their flavors. And currently the problem is we don't have enough room for a freezer for me to get another shipment. We got a shipment a month or so ago, but the key lime goes really fast. Eddie's up on Charles Street carries Taharka Brothers ice cream.
They
which
do.
Isn't too far from our house.
So do Streets, by the way. So yeah, I mean, I know these places because I've gotten addicted to the Honey Graham myself, and you can't find it.
Yeah, so they carry Honey Graham because I think probably more people like it than key lime pie. They had key lime pie the last time I went, so I got 2 pints of it. But my kids are crushing it, so it's not getting to me. So I'm on my own tier.
Got to hide your ice cream, dude.
Roasted strawberry and caramel crunch.
You guys have put drivers all over the region at risk because as you're talking, they're breaking every law possible. They're grabbing their phones. They're Googling Taharka ice cream.
Wake and bake.
So they can get it on the way home. So to all the police officers trying to keep our roads safe, we apologize. That was Nestor and Arsh making everybody break every law that there is, looking for where they can stop to get the Harka ice cream on the way home. Nestor, I got smarter again, buddy.
Arsh, we really appreciate it, and I am looking forward to getting within 5.5 feet and having an open beverage on a ledge with you and Alex Smith and all the folks down there. And my wife's been shopping down at the market. Don and I have had coffee down there. I love the Haitian food. You know that. You're here, we're here, we're all in it together, and hopefully we'll come out of this thing in better shape than we started. But we really appreciate the support, your time, and just more than anything, just investing in Baltimore. I mean, that was the
Absolutely.
Whole story here is who are the people that are going to be a part of putting Baltimore back together again? And that's what we've been looking for. We appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, thank you, everybody.
My pleasure.
At Case, Arsh, thank you very much.
I will. I'll say hi to everyone. Don, one last PSA. You're talking about people being careful on their phone. You know this. I don't know how many people know this, but my father started a thing called the Maryland Highway Safety Foundation. And he actually did it himself, and then got a bunch of other engineering company executives, as well as insurance executives, to put money into it. And they started pushing for the law to end texting, make texting and driving illegal. He was in everyone's ear about it for years, and I'm sure he was in your Don.
Oh, your dad would not let up on me until I hooked him up with the school system and created a partnership. I mean, that was such a passion for him.
Yeah.
But he did so many things and was so philanthropic with the medical world. I mean, you know, if you were around Baltimore in the region, you knew Fred Murmur. And I just think back when you talked about opportunity, that here was a young man that showed up probably not speaking a lick of English, I'm guessing, when he was 18 years old.
He did speak English. Yeah, it wasn't like perfect English. It was sort of like English as a second language. But they learned English in school growing up.
Wow. Well, thanks for everything, Arsh. You guys are doing great work. Thanks for believing in the city. Nestor.
Save me some chicken and ice cream and everything and some fries and some wings and some beer and some cans and all of that good stuff. We'll get back down to Cross Street Market. We're doing Baltimore Positive around here. Former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller and I, we're now up to 220 episodes. Mayoral candidates, lots and lots of news and views in and around the election, including Mark Steiner, the legend, Anne Arundel County Executive Stuart Pittman, as well as all the educational leaders from Dr. Wilson over at Morgan State and Dr. Rabowski at the UMBC and Dr. Schatzel at Towson, all throughout the region. I am Nestor. He is Don. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and Baltimore Positive.